Good morning, and first of all, let me thank the organizer for the possibility of being here and spending a few weeks in such a great place. And then let me thank also Fernando for giving me much time to speak you, tell you something about the recent results that we have had with Cristiano Ciuti on the many-body physics, what can be done with using exciton polytons in semiconductor microcavities. A short outline of a talk. I will start discussing what is a semiconductor microcavity and what are exciton polytons, just to give a framework of this kind of different systems from atomic quantum gases, but which can be also interesting to study the quantum Bose gas. Then the three next points are some more formal discussion about the time-dependent Gauss-Pitayevsky equation for exciton polytons. We shall discuss later on its stationary states, which are the analog for our driven dissipative system of equation of state of a gas. We will then go to the collective excitation spectrum in the Bogoliubov approximation. And in the last part of the talk, we shall discuss the experimental consequences of the results discussed here. In particular, we shall point out how the Landau superfluidity gives a very important effect on the emitted light from the microcavity. And then we shall conclude giving some perspectives. First of all, the physical system we are considering. Here is a sketch of a microcavity. This is a planar object which has been cut along a plane, which is orthogonal to the growth axis. There are two mirrors, which are DBR mirrors, distributed Bragg effectors mirrors, here and here. And in between is a cavity layer. The mirrors are built by superposing some lambda over 4 alternate layers of gallium arsenide and aluminum arsenide to form a Bragg mirror. In the middle, there is a cavity layer which confines light into a photonic mode, which is delocalized along the cavity plane, which is like this. The dispersion for the photon, the in-plane dispersion for the photon, is therefore given by that formula. In the cavity layer, a quantum well can be inserted. A quantum well is a layer, very thin layer of another material, which can be indium gallium arsenide, which confines both electrons and holes inside this plane. The fact that all electrons and holes are confined along this plane gives an enhancement of the electron-hole binding into an exciton, which is a sort of hydrogen atom formed by an electron and hole which are going around each other. And this object, called exciton, behaves as a boson provided the density of exciton times the Bohr radius of exciton, that is the average distance between electron and hole, is much smaller than 1. Also, excitons are delocalized along the cavity plane, that is the quantum well plane, but their dispersion is nearly flat, which means that the excitonic mass is much larger than the mass of photons. Just a side remark, the excitonic mass is much smaller than the mass of an atom. So all these kind of systems have much lighter masses.
Usually Bohr's radius in semiconductors is enormous. So what kind of constraint does it put on the density?
Enormous? What do you mean enormous? This is 10 nanometers. Because 10 nanometers, I think.
With large dielectric constant, so it's
but a larger constant, it would be 20 at most. And for
100?
I think no. 100 means the electric refraction index of 10. I don't know any material with a refractive index of 10. You have to do something really special. These materials have a Bohr radius for exciton, which I think is between 10 and 100 nanometers. And the densities which are used in the experiments are well within this limit, factor 100. So you don't have these problems. Okay, the exciton and the photon are radiatively coupled by dipole electric transition. Since the in-plane vector is conserved, a single photonic state is coupled to a single excitonic state. So there is no coupling to a continuum, so no spontaneous emission, but rather two coupled modes with a vacuum radial splitting omega r. This is a sort of system similar to what is in cavity quantum electrodynamics, but for the important difference that the in-plane K vector is conserved. So cavity photon and exciton are delocalized particles.
I was just going to ask, how did these mirrors?
Some 10 layers. Some 10, 20 layers.
So 20 not layers. That brilliant mirrors? Or?
They are, but I think the reflectivity, if the transmittivity is less than 1%. More than. But you could grow them much longer. The only problem is a trade-off between the reflectivity and the imperfections that you introduce in the mirror while growing them. These are state-of-the-art mirrors, which give a width for the cavity mode of about 0.05, 0.1 millielectron volt, which is...
Something totally different. In the 3D case, there's always a big issue about whether the excitonic gas is stable or unstable with respect to electron hole droplets. Are you going to talk about that here?
I know it's sort of electron hole droplets. We mean it gives just every exciton. They combine, creating just a fluid of electrons and holes, a plasma.
They don't recombine to nothing. They recombine
into a big droplet.
Yeah, they basically go metallic, if you like.
Okay, I see. I don't know much about this transition, but actually in experiments, this effect has never been observed, as far as I know. So I think it's not an issue. I don't know. I can.
Because in the 3D case, it's hard to do the other way around. The electron hole droplet's an easy thing to make. And the sort of dense-ish exciton gas is quite hard to make.
So yeah. But the density, maybe the issue is the density. Here, I'm imposing this condition. I have a very dilute gas. So maybe there is a combination towards that system you mean, but you need high densities, so you have to bring all excitons at the same point, big density. It's sort of three-body recombination in atoms.
Sure, maybe it's
metastable. Maybe metastable, but I don't know. You know, here you have another channel of decay, which is worse. It's just a single particle decay channel, which is more important, I think, than yours.
So this system you will be looking at, it's out of equilibrium. Has a very large, relatively large lifespan.
It is out of equilibrium.
It's a three-dimensional system, which Mike mentioned. And so because of that, you can sort of...
Yes, in lifetime, reasonably large. It's about some picoseconds, which is rather large for these kind of systems. Here, you have access with femtosecond dynamics. In any lab, the lab LPA, with which I'm collaborating, they have femtosecond lasers. They have access to very, very short dynamics.
So one other basic question. I mean, when these things were done in three dimensions, the thing that people always did was actually use an indirect gap semiconductor to make the lifetime long.
Yeah.
Because then you needed phonons and things. But isn't gallium arsenide direct?
It's a direct gap.
So would it be clever to use silicon then? No.
The fact that using gallium arsenide, you have the advantage of being coupled to light is what I want. Because I'm avoiding recombination of excitons into light just because of a Purcell effect. Since I'm conserving K vector in the cavity, the exciton is radiatively coupled only to a photon. And a large coupling to the photon excitation for me is good because it gives a large rabbi coupling. So it's a positive issue for me, while it was very nasty for bulk semiconductor experiments. For that reason, Mizirovich, Snoka had to work with indirect gap semiconductors, copper oxides, And so, and another point, I will point it out maybe better later. Here, I don't wait for phonons to both condensate my system. I introduce the system already both condensate, both condensed. So I skip all the preparation part, which takes a long time, and which can be can create problems because you need a longer lifetime. Okay, let's go to the more formal part of the talk. The Hamiltonian of a system contains a part of single particle, an interaction term, and a term for which describes the driving of a cavity by some external field, and then a dissipation term. Let's start by the single particle Hamiltonian. Here is Hamiltonian. The eigenmodes of the single particle Hamiltonian give the single particle elementary excitations of a system, which are the polaritons, which are superposition of exciton and photon. There is a superposition because of a Rabe coupling, which couples the exciton and the photon. In the strong coupling regime, the two modes, which comes out from the diagonalization, are well resolved. As one can see here, are experimental data from the Lausanne group taken by photoluminescence. And these are the upper polariton and lower polariton branches. And you see here is the Rabe splitting of the two, which is about 8 millielectron volt. The exciton is the good one. I don't remember. The one which is coupled to radiation. I don't remember which one. I think it's singlet.
But you can create the
others also. To create the other, you have problems because it's not coupled to radiation. Okay. So you can create collisionally, but not directly.
Because I guess in Mike and I still puzzled about the advantage somehow there's some advantage here that either stabilize it much more than in three dimensions. Now you mentioned the low density, and then you also mentioned the advantage target bank can get transitions over here. And but those advantage also appear in three dimensions. So we couldn't quite identify what makes things more stable here. There must be some really good reason. See, they go to quantum wells. So what are they?
But another advantage of quantum wells that exciton and holes are confined into a plane, okay. So the binding energy is larger. It's about a factor of two larger. So the two lines of polaritonic lines are more separated. Then another advantage is, as we shall see in the following, is the easier manipulation of these objects. Because you have a 2D plane, you can inject things from outside, from free space, you go with a laser, you create on the 2D system, and then you analyze it from outside. If you had a three-dimensional bulk system, it would be harder to analyze it, because you cannot get in. And you would have very strong surface effects. This is another advantage, but I think it's a different issue from the one which was worrying you. You mean the photon line? I look, the zero is here. The zero, you should reflect it. It's asymmetric, the figure. And the photon has a dispersion which is given by the square root of 1 plus k over kz square. And here is the exciton. Okay. Here, just remarks on the other terms. The external potential can be introduced both for excitons and for the photon.
Can I ask another question? The exciton, is it in a relative S state?
Or it's relative S state.
Okay.
I think it's the only one which is coupled to radiation, S state.
The reason it's dipole aligned is because of the atomic orbitals and the Gallium arsenide.
Yes, it's the block wave function which gives the dipole moment, interband dipole moment, not the relative one. An external potential, both of excitons and cavity modes, can be imposed to the system by either by wedging the cavity of a quantum well or by applying a non-resonant laser field, so to give an optical stack shift of excitonic mode, which are controlled way of applying an external potential, or can also be applied in by disorder, for example, inhomogeneities in the Bragg mirrors or the interface roughness of quantum well. Interactions are given mostly by exciton-exciton binary collisions. Experimentally, we know that the G, the coupling constant, is positive, and there is some qualitative agreement with some approximate calculations. But this point has not been clarified theoretically yet. There is only a...
You would have thought at large distances it would be attractive. Is that right?
But the, G, the effective G, like for atoms, also for atoms at long distance, is
at the hard core.
The hard core. They have done some calculations. My co-worker Cristiano has done something, and he says that his calculations, even if they introduce very strong approximations, they are in qualitative agreement with experiments, which give a positive coupling constant.
It's surprising, because in three dimensions there are certainly bi-exciton bound states.
But there is a bi-exciton, but like in atoms, you have a bound state for positive scattering length.
Oh, I see. This is metastable again with respect to the bi-exciton.
Ah, yeah. It's definitely metastable with respect to bi-exciton.
Yes.
The external driving field, EP, can have different dependencies on time, monochromatic, pulse, bichromatic, depending on what you want to inject in the cavity. And also in space, can be either a plane wave, an optical vortex, many other possibilities. Dissipation term comes from both two channels. One is for photon, which is radiatively coupled to external propagating photons, and which can suffer background absorption. This channel cannot be avoided, otherwise the external driving would be impossible itself. The exciton is coupled also to some thermal bath, which gives some decoherence and non-radiative recombination processes, scattering on phonons, trapping localized state, and many others. In the following, we shall model all these channels of decay by damping rates, gamma X, gamma C, which experimentally are generally more or less similar. Okay, just some results, recent experimental results, which have been studied by using the Hamiltonian of the previous slide. Here is a result of polariton amplification parametric. One put a pump here, and at such an angle, called magic angle, in order to have this process resonant. So if I inject a probe at k equals 0, this is parametrically amplified, creating at the same time an idler field here at 2 kp. Here is the experimental data from the Southampton group. Here is the pump without probe. With the probe here, you see that the probe is strong, even if at beginning it's very weak, and the idler is formed as well. These experiments are the polaritonic analog to what has been done with matter waves in the Gaithersburg group, and here we just by seeding a very small matter wave at a given momentum and four wave mixing it with some photonic light. We see here that the matter wave here is amplified. See, here is the seed, here is the pump, here is the probe, without amplification, with amplification. Okay, let's go on with the theory, which comes from the Hamiltonian. One can apply mean field theory, since
that is a 1999 science paper temperature.
I think so.
This is a recent one, that one.
Yes, I think
that one.
It's 1999.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. The Poulayton-Gospitaevsky equation, which comes by applying a mean field theory of two Hamiltonian cited in two slides ago. The differences with ordinary Gospitaevsky equation are the presence of a driving and dissipative term, driving term and dissipative terms.
What is the origin of dissipation
here? The dissipation is generally coming from several different kind of effects, the radiative decay of photon, the coherence of exciton, many others. And here, it was not my goal to describe all kind of garbage that can be in the system, but rather to model them in the simplest way. The difference with ordinary GPE is the driving dissipative terms, and the fact that we have two coupled fields, which can be mixed each other by the rabbi coupling, and which have definitely different masses, the cavity photonic field and the excitonic field. Both of them have an X dependence, because are delocalized field.
Is it strictly in two dimensions, or you just have an external potential which models?
Oh, but I don't care of external potential. My hypothesis is that the third dimension is frozen. For the exciton, it's frozen because we are working in the quantum well. The energies of the next subband of the quantum well are about 100 mEV higher than the energies in we are working with, so very far away. And the cavity, the next transverse mode is about one EV higher. So
I understand that the reason I'm asking is that if you're strictly in two dimensions, then the Gospitaevsky equation is not strictly applicable to this case. There are logarithmic corrections whose interaction term is
You're perfectly right.
And if the density is so small, then maybe they would become important.
But for the densities we are considering here, all estimates I've done are consistent with this kind of contact potential. Maybe one.
I would agree with Jacopo, because it's known from literature a long time ago that in 2D, when you get this thing, you simply do renormalization of the coupling constant. And it has been explained by Goyko again a long time ago that it would correspond to a scattering amplitude at a relative energy equal to twice the chemical. Although you are right that it depends on density, or the coupling constant is momentum dependent, but eventually in this type of equation it is renormalized, and then you see that it's just the scattering amplitude.
Well, in two dimensions, pseudo potential is not defined, so you cannot just.
No one is defining the pseudo potential. You know, it has been done long time ago in Abrikos of Gorkov, Zaloshinsky. But it is explained that it's the scattering amplitude at a relative energy equal to twice the chemical potential. That's it. And no one is defining pseudo potential here. No one is doing that. It's just a short range potential.
Well, it has nothing to do with what Abrikosov was doing today. This has been done by Michael Schick in 1971, who studied a uniform Bose gas in two dimensions, and he explained what needs to be done. What needs to be done in this case. And there are difficulties having something to do with the fact that you cannot define in this case scattering way.
I think you are right. I think probably what Jacopo is doing is to this is a quasi two-dimensional situation. It's not strictly two-dimensional.
But the coupling constant is a sort of phenomenological one, and since experimentally it's an issue which could be clarified in.
Actually, Jacopo, the equation that you are writing, it's a classical field equation.
Yes, the mean field level.
Yes, so, but the classical field equation somehow assumes that the occupation numbers of the modes you are interested in, you are describing, are large.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm supposing that the gas is dilute. And this is an hypothesis which has been, until so far, well verified in experiments. And this is in if thinking to the system from the point of view of nonlinear optics, it's the usual thing. The first thing to do is to write down the Maxwell's equations in a nonlinear medium, which are the mean field equations in the language of quantum gases. So this is the first model one can do. One can, next step we intend to do is to add to this mean field equation some noise term, for example, in a Wigner representation or some other kind of stochastic point of view, to see whether the corrections due to quantum fluctuations are important or not.
You assume you are in the BEC regime.
Yes, I'm fully in the BEC regime.
These things would not apply if you were in the PCS regime of excitons.
No. I'm a dilute gas. Dilute gas of both atoms.
Only by the pilot EVs experiment.
Yes, this is one motivation. Since we don't know much about the coupling constant, this is a model. We shall go on further on the analysis. Okay, the system we're taking is homogeneous. And we take a monochromatic plane wave excitation with a finite momentum, Kp. So to give... So to give to the polaritons in the cavity some momentum, so some motion to the cavity. And we look for plane wave stationary solutions, this form, which have to satisfy these pair of equations, which are the analog for our driven dissipative system of the equation of state of for the Bose gas. The oscillation frequency, notice the difference to with respect to the usual equation of state for a gas at equilibrium, the oscillation frequency of the macroscopic wave function is no longer fixed by the chemical potential as a unique function of a density, but it's rather a tunable quantity which is equal to the frequency of the pump laser, which gives some new flexibility of the system, some new effects. Okay, some other remarks on the equation of state, which relates the internal intensity to the incident one, and the internal intensity is related to a transmitted one. So one can have two different behaviors as a function of the pump frequency. Optical limiting, in which the internal intensity grows less than linearly with the incident one, and optical bistability with an hysteresis loop. Notice the two instability points, A and B, in particular the A, remind it. This will be important in the following. Here, this dashed part is the instability part of the hysteresis loop. And these solutions cannot be taken as stationary solutions because they are unstable with respect to different kinds of instability, as we shall see in the following. This is experimental data for by stability in the system we are considering. Actually, the data, the numerical parameters of the system we are using are the ones taken from that experiment.
So is this by stability, is it homogeneous in the sample, or is it, do you go to mains?
The experiment has been done with domains, but domains are large enough to be in a sort of local density approximation. They were moving the spot of a laser across the sample, but at any position, they were considering the system as homogeneous. So these calculations have been done for a homogeneous system, and they fit rather well with the experimental data.
What makes that point B?
Unstable, modulational instability.
It's just part of a continuous curve.
Yeah, you're perfectly right. The instability here, from here to here, is the usual one. The one from here to here, the system is unstable with respect to transverse modulation. Modulational instability is because the effective coupling constant in some way gets negative. I will show you some data in the following. It's interesting. Bogoliubov theory. Once we have a stationary state, to look at small variations around the stationary state, one uses the Bogoliubov theory, that is the linearized version of a Gross-Peter-Yeski equation, which gives a Bogoliubov matrix, which has this form. Its eigenvalues give the energies of a Bogoliubov modes, which are grouped in pairs of particle and node-like branches, which are symmetrical with respect to the inversion of momentum with respect to Kp and the inversion with respect to the frequency omega p. They are the plus and minus, usual plus and minus modes of Bogoliubov theory with respect to the chemical potential. Here, the chemical potential is replaced by the pump frequency. The dispersion of modes depends not only on the interaction energy, but also on the pump frequency omega p. This is an important point that we shall see better in the following. Some approximate results can be obtained assuming that the interaction energy is small with respect to the difference of energies of a tuple ion, so only the lower one is effectively excited, and under the parabolic approximation of the lower polariton, which is good at low wave vectors. Here is an approximate analytical expression that has been verified to fit rather well to the result of an exact diagonalization of a matrix. Remember this quantity is important in the following. The effective detuning of a pump with respect to the shifted mode frequency by the interaction energy. Different regimes, in fact, depend on the sign of delta P and on the value of interaction energy. Difference with respect to the standard Bogoliubov, the tilting term, and the presence of a detuning delta P here. And the damping, clearly. Some results. Bogoliubov dispersion for the resonance case, delta P equals zero, which is this point of the hysteresis loop. OK. In this case, the particle and hole branches touch here Kp, and one has the standard Bogoliubov dispersion, but for the tilting by Vp, which is the motion velocity of a polariton fluid. Linear regime, we have two parabolas, nothing interesting. When interaction energy grows, here is larger, even larger, the sound velocity grows, and here I have an angle, as usual, and for sufficiently large interaction energies, the slope here gets positive. So I don't have any longer this intersection point, which means that the group velocity, the sum velocity of the both gas, gets larger than the motion velocity, Landau criterion. We shall come back on this point in the following. In the non-resonant case, two things can happen. Here is effective detuning negative. The branches no longer touch here Kp, and the gap can appear. Nothing particularly interesting. Here, if delta P is positive, something more interesting happens. The two branches are pushed one against the other. So in the...
can you remind me, I just don't know, but what is delta P?
Delta P is the effective detuning, the pump frequency minus the renormalized frequency of the polariton mode. Okay. And just, OK, delta P smaller than zero, negative, is here on the upper branch. Delta P positive is here. And we shall now explain why this mode is unstable. Okay. On the lower branch, the two branches are pushed one against the other, and in this part, they stick together because of the antilinear coupling term which is present in the Bogoliubov equation, anti-Hermitian term in the Bogoliubov equations. This one. This term, which is anti-Hermitian, so the two branches stick together with respect to the real part, the real part of the frequency are stick together, while the imaginary parts of the two branches are split. And the dynamical instability, the one at the point B, arises when the interaction energy gets larger than gamma. This effect in optics is known as the parametric instability. That is the threshold for parametric oscillation of a parametric amplifier. In the language of quantum fluids, this instability is called a modulational instability, because it starts for modes which have a finite wave vector in the cavity plane. It's a sort of collapse of the Bose condensate under attractive interactions. It's the same kind of physics. Okay, the Bogoliubov theory is the starting point for the study of the response of a system to a weak defect.
So the instability of the lower branches that you tend to bring it up form blobs and so on.
Exactly, yes, it starts forming blobs. You start having a modulation. I don't have time to discuss this as...
Instability of the upper branches, what, it's just unstable?
The upper branch is just unstable as a usual cavity. The lower branch has this modulation instability with respect to blobs, which has been observed in the Southampton group by Baumberg and his co-workers. Okay, here we place in a region where the system is stable. This is a perturbation, and we study the effect of this perturbation. The modes which are resonantly excited are the ones, the Bogoliubov modes, at omega p. And these give rise to a Cherenkov emission of propagating sound waves in the system. These are clearly damped on some length scale, which of approximately the group velocity of these waves divided by the damping term. And at the same time, however, because of a finite lifetime, also some non-resonant modes can be excited, but they give rise to a non-propagating perturbation, which is well localized. For disordered systems, disordered ensemble of defects, the result for a single defect has to be summed, and in K space the pattern is similar, but for the presence of speckles due to the polytonic coherence. These effects have been already observed in the linear regime, and it's called in the semiconductor language resonant Rayleigh scattering, which comes from the diffusion of a wave which is going forward by the defects, which is scattered in all directions, still conserving the energy. Here is an experimental image. Here is the direction of the incident beam. And here is the RRS ring. I hope you can see it. Is this ring. These experiments have been done in K-space, according to the setup in the Lausanne group, but can be also done in real space. Here is an image of some polariton which are injected and then propagate in the sample and go hit a defect which is placed here. And you see that stripes appear here. These are due to the interference of the incident beam with the scattered light, as we shall see in the next slide better.
I don't understand the geometry. So you have this source up, say,
of this case.
Unless you suppose this is the screen is your sample, and then the light is coming in this direction, perpendicular to it.
The direction, light is coming here,
yeah,
with then, some angle.
And then the light is scattered, this ring is on the plane, or is it perpendicular to the plane?
Is on the plane, okay, on the plane, is here. Light enters like this with a momentum along the plane in this direction and can be scattered along the plane in all directions lying on a circle.
Jacopo, I have a question here. Exciton polaritons, these superpositional quasi particles, this is only an approximation. Yes, if I just work with excitons and photons, I make these combined excitations, but this is only an approximation. And in fact, the exciton polaritons will have a finite lifetime.
Sure.
Even if the lifetime of an exciton is infinite.
Yes.
The lifetime of exciton polariton will be finite. So,
you mean because the photon has a finite lifetime?
Not only the photon, because the exciton polariton is only an approximate state. Yes.
What channel are you considering?
Well, there will be decay channels for excitons and polaritons. For example, these polaritons that can decay into polaritons with other momenta.
Ah, sure, yeah.
And this has been identified long time ago, by the way. Yes. My question is, in this system, there can be many systems with exciton polariton. In this particular system, the lifetime of exciton polariton, is it due to a finite lifetime of an exciton, or there is also something else?
Apparently, as far as I know, experiments are all consistent to a lifetime given by the decay, the separate decay of exciton and of photon. And the decay rate is the algebraic mean of the two.
Yeah. It's a little bit surprising to me, because usually if you consider, for example, condensate polaritons, which exist in both condensed water Einstein condensate, then you will see that the lifetime of polariton is finite due to the decay processes I mentioned. Yes. That polariton is not a very stable state.
Here, the fact that we are in the presence of a strong coupling with the cavity brings the polariton energy much below the energy of the electron hole continuum and of other excitonic states. So you gain, for example, a few millielectron volt, 5 millielectron volt. And working on a lower polaritonic state, you are more protected from spurious effects. So, okay, these are experimental results. An important point that I will be concerned with the coherent emitted intensity, which can be spectrally separated from the photoluminescence just by some spectral filtering technique. Okay, and final results. Here is the far field emission pattern in the resonant case, which is the most interesting. Here at linear regime, we have the RRS ring, the peak due to the unscattered light, and the resonant Rayleigh scattering ring. At nonlinear regime, for weak nonlinearities, the motion velocity is larger than the sound velocity, and the resonant Rayleigh scattering ring is only squeezed into a 8-light shape. The lobes touch here at Kp, and the lobe corresponding to the particle branch is much more intense than the one corresponding to the hole branch. At larger nonlinear energies, when the sound velocity is larger than the motion velocity of a fluid, the Landau criterion predicts superfluidity of a gas, and this has the effect on this emission pattern of the disappearance of the lobes. They are just replaced by a spot whose intensity integrated in all wave vectors is much less intense than the intensity measured in the other cases, which means that the superfluidity of the polariton gas reduces the interaction of a gas with the defect. So it quenches the scattering at the defect. This is the non-resonant case. Negative detuning, there is just a gap here in the emission. Positive detuning, you have this band of very, very strong emitting modes, which are the precursor of the parametric instability, that is the modulational instability. Here are some emission patterns in the X plane. At linear regime, you have parabolic wavefronts. The polariton fluid, just let me remind, is moving to the right. Yes, it's moving that direction. So it's like as if the impurity was moving leftwards. These are parabolic wavefronts. If the velocity of sound is small, we have emission of Cherenkov waves. You see the Cherenkov cone with some precursors, parabolic shape. In the nonlinear regime, the perturbation is localized because no propagating mode can be excited, and the system behaves as a superfluid in the sense that the fluid flows around the impurity without giving dissipation. That is,
can we take the extent of the black dot to indicate how big the perturbation is?
You mean this size?
Yes. What's the size of the defect? Is it visible on that scale?
No, the defect is about 1 micrometer. Here is 20.
Okay, and how big is the coherence length of the condensate?
Infinite. That is, inside on the system with a uniform plane wave. The healing length here, I can tell you from here, it should be a few micrometers of the order of this.
So that means the size of the defects and the healing length are not that different.
There is a factor 10.
Okay, 10, yeah.
Let's say the defect is 1 micrometer, the healing length is about 10 micrometers.
And so do they see vortex production when they make the defect bigger?
I haven't looked at it, but I expect. I'm actually doing the calculations. I'm doing now the calculation for vortex production.
But they haven't done the experiment.
No. You have to realize that people in this community know very little about the physics of quantum gases. So even these things are very new for them. So we are trying to convince our friend experimentalist, maybe Joa, you know them, Jérôme Pignon, Philippe Roussignol, to make the experiment. They have all the means to do it. We have just to push on them to convince.
Yes, I think
you will. OK, conclusions. We have studied a novel quantum Bose gas formed by exciton politons in semiconductor microcavity. Some disadvantages. Politons have finite lifetime, which is mostly due to extrinsic effects. So in principle, one should be able to make it longer and longer. Other problem, that more work is needed to characterize the exciton-exciton scattering properties, especially in the case where the spin is concerned. There are some experiments, but they have not been fully understood yet. And the system have many, many good points, which make them very interesting from an experimental point of view for the study of a quantum Bose gas. Let's just point out a few of them. A new physics is easily accessed, the one of driven dissipative systems outside of equilibrium. Another good point is that the long-range coherence is directly imprinted by the driving laser. So there is no need for the complicated cooling procedure which is needed for atoms. The exciton-exciton interactions can be very important. That is, the interaction energy much larger than the damping energy, which means that collisional effects really determine the physics.
But doesn't it also imply that the interactions are rather weak compared to the driving field? I mean, somehow you're saying that there's no issue about whether there's a condensate because the driving field forces it to be.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, that means the interactions are not big enough to compete with that. It's just it's a single mode process that forces you to condense.
Yes, you force it to condense in a single mode, but then you can switch off your laser. Uh-huh. And the system evolves without being forced any longer to be coherent. So you could, for example, study the coherence effects in an extended sample.
Is that what happens? Does it decohere before it decays?
There are not experiments yet, as far as I know.
So on this lifetime is collective or incoherent?
The experiments, I think, are not at this point of subtlety. So you should make a measurement within a big sample and have a look to the coherence at different points. This should be an interesting issue, but as far as I know, nobody has looked at it.
Jacopo, when they do these exciton experiments, so they have these two delay, they create exciton. For a long time, we were discussing the issue of Bose-Einstein condensation of exciton. So what about this Bose-Einstein condensation of excitons here?
It's a different, you know, even in this community, they have worked on these issues for some time. They were injecting non-coherent excitons or non-coherent electron-hole pairs at high energy, and they were waiting them to recombine and then cool down in contact to the background and go to an excitonic condensate state.
So, did they achieve BC of excitons or not?
I think it's... I don't know exactly. There is a debate, still open debate.
Yes.
I don't think there's any firm evidence
in
this. No.
In 3D samples, I think there is no evidence. In 2D, I think it's you have really to look at papers and look carefully what they've done.
Yes, but you know, I tried to do so, and I concluded that there is no clear evidence.
I perfectly agree.
Arguments.
The clear, I agree with you. No clear evidence. No evidence, we should look carefully. Because people claim to have succeeded.
Well, Jim Wolf claimed a long time ago, 11 years ago, that they crossed the BEC line at our BEC conference at Larry Coterme. Yes. And then, sometime later, he has withdrawn.
Yeah.
So this was the story number one, and after that, several people were saying something and so on.
Yeah.
Why I'm asking this question, not in order to show my knowledge of the subject, but, which I have already done, but to tell you that if there will be a Bose-Einstein condensate of excitons, then it's an extremely interesting experiment to obtain condensate polaritons. Because then the condensate will act as a classical field, yes? And you will get somewhat different types of polaritons compared to a non-condensed, yes? Yes? And this is actually a very interesting system.
But John, the Siskinist, he's talking about a BEC.
Oh.
In experiments.
No, here is BEC.
Oh, BEC.
It's exactly what you said is very definitely applicable to what I'm saying.
This I absolutely misunderstood in your talk, because you wrote the equation for classical field, which you can always write, even if the system is not Bose-condensed.
No, I am forcing the system to be coherent from the outside. Since I'm injecting excitons, polaritons, with an external...
It's called a thermodynamically stable BEC. It's meant a stable BEC produced by the
it's a stable BEC produced by the laser.
Yeah, why don't we have these discussions afterward? Because it's 1:30 now.
Okay.
Okay.
A couple of final remarks. The external trapping potential can be applied to the system just to study the dynamics in a trap. Excitons photons have some spin degrees of freedom. So something interesting can be done with spin. Experiments are in progress, but they have not been explained yet. My friend Cristiano is actually working on this issue with his student, but I don't know of any result yet. Main important point is this. With respect to both condensates of atoms, here the diagnostic is much easier because you only have to look at the emitted light. For example, the real and k-space intensity distribution gives immediately the density and the momentum distribution of the Bose system inside the cavity. And even higher order correlation functions of emitted field reflect closely the physics of the correlation properties inside the BEC, the quantum gas of polaritons. The time evolution can also be followed directly in situ by means of street cameras. Even if the time evolution is very fast for these samples, these street cameras are able to follow it because they have a resolution which is better than a picosecond. So these systems seem to be ideal candidates for the study of both systems in situ. And other kind of geometries can be done by means of an external tapping potential. Even one-dimensional systems can be done. Lattices can be created just by modulating the potential, and so on. So many things have to be done on the subject. Thank you.